Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Accidentally Famous by Marissa Clark, narrated by Summer Morton. Chapter 1. The last time Cassidy James had seen Tristan McGuffey, he'd been wearing his medical school graduation robe, and she'd been wearing a mouthful of braces and her high school band uniform. At the time, she remembered thinking that nothing could have been worse. Way wrong. This was worse. Without even looking toward the door, she could feel his presence. Feel him staring at her, covered in dirt and dust, as she leaned into the crawl space under his dad's house to inspect a support beam. Closing her eyes, she pushed down a prickly wave of disappointment. For 2 months, she'd known he'd planned to return to Blink to visit his dad. And for 2 months, she'd imagined this moment. Well, not this moment, but rather what this moment should have been. In her fantasies, her childhood, now adult, crush would walk in, stop in astonishment, and marvel at how grown up and put together little Cassidy James had become. At least she'd gotten the first two parts right. He'd walked in and stopped in astonishment. Slowly, she straightened to a kneeling position. And since her hands were so filthy, she resorted to blowing some escaped strands of hair out of her face. Of course, they fell right back across her eyes. Oh yeah, so grown up, so perfectly put together. No doubt he hadn't said anything because he was struck silent with lust. Not. She pushed the hair out of her eyes using the back of her forearm and forced herself to twist and face him. Wood flooring plank in one hand and pry bar in the other. Sure enough, her dream man, Tristan McGuffey, Dr. Tristan McGuffey, stood in the doorway with a small suitcase in hand. A suitcase? 2 months ago, when his dad, Roger McGuffey, had said that Tristan was going to drive in from Portland, Cassidy had assumed it would be a day visit, like the few times he'd stopped by during the years back before his mom had died. He didn't enter, but instead scanned the room, which gave her a moment to compose herself. Her memories didn't do him justice, which surprised her, considering those memories kept her up at night. For a moment, she was transported back to her favorite memory of Tristan McGuffey. She'd been 16 and had just finished helping her dad install a new water heater at the Starfish Diner, which, back then, had been the only restaurant in their tiny town of Blink, Maine. While her dad gave the tank a final leak and pressure test back in the kitchen, the owner, Sally, had treated Cassidy to a root beer float at the counter, one stool over from Tristan. He had driven home from med school for a day visit and was waiting for his parents to join him. He had ordered a cheeseburger and a strawberry milkshake with extra whipped cream. She remembered that because it was her favorite meal at the diner, too. In fact, since ninth grade, she'd cataloged what she and Tristan had in common, which pretty much boiled down to three main things. Both grew up in a teensy town with a population hovering around 200. They both had a love of reading, as evidenced by his always having a book on hand. And they both had an appreciation of Sally's cheeseburgers. Though this similarity was probably shared by anyone who had ever tasted one of Sally's cheeseburgers. Her 16-year-old self had been thrilled at being seated only one stool over from Tristan. He was a lot older than she was, but in her mind, that was no obstacle. By the time he finished medical school and she graduated from high school the year after that, she'd be grown up enough to catch his eye. Her dad had told her that the older a person got, the less age mattered. In fact, her parents had been over a decade apart in age. "So Cassie," Tristan had said, "you're a freshman now, right?"
"Junior,"
she'd corrected, wanting to be sure he knew she was older. He'd swiveled on his stool to study her for a moment, and she remembered her heart racing like her hamster, Roscoe, on his exercise wheel. I bet you're going to be a knockout when you grow up, he'd said. A knockout. Sally'd backed through the swinging kitchen doors, carrying a box that, judging from the way she was leaning back to counterbalance it, was heavy. Tristan had dropped his burger to his plate to run around the counter to relieve her of it. Where to? He'd asked. Always such a helpful boy, Sally had crooned, pointing to an open space under the service window. I'll unpack it later. Helpful, handsome, and a soon-to-be doctor. Cassidy was still basking in Tristan's knockout comment when her dad stuck his head out through the kitchen door.
All done. Let's go, Cassie, baby.
Baby, ugh. Reluctantly, she'd slid off the stool and placed her napkin on the counter.
So, I remember your nickname at church used to be Sassy Cassie. Do they still call you that around here?
Tristan had asked, slipping back onto his stool at the counter. Her little brother, Luke, had come up with that nickname when he was in kindergarten, and she'd still not forgiven him for it all these years later. She really should let that go. Her brother was in college now, for goodness sake. Not if they want to live another day, she'd answered. Tristan had laughed, and she remembered feeling proud and sophisticated that she'd amused him.
Cassie, let's go,
her dad had hollered from the kitchen. Giving Tristan one last longing glance, she'd skirted the counter and headed toward the kitchen doors.
Hey, Sassy Cassie,
Tristan had called. Holding her breath, she'd turned to face him, heart spinning on that exercise wheel, too excited to even be angry about the nickname.
See you soon,
he'd said with a wink. In Cassidy's 16-year-old mind, that was only a few inches off of asking her out on a date. See ya, she'd said, before dashing through the swinging kitchen doors. Only 2 more years, she remembered thinking. In 2 years, she'd be all grown up. In her mind, 18 had been the magic number. Only it hadn't been magical at all. Tristan's mother had died the year she'd turned 18, and he'd stopped coming to Blink altogether. Cassidy pulled herself back to the present and studied the current Dr. Tristan McGuffey as he entered the house and pulled the door closed behind him. Maybe it was her grown-up perspective, but he was more handsome than she remembered. And taller, and a little bit intimidating. His blonde hair was impeccably styled and groomed, like he'd come straight from the barber. He had a business casual vibe going, with khaki slacks and a crisp white dress shirt, like you'd wear with a suit. The perfect pairing with her paint-splattered, dust-covered clothes. Her usual state, since she took over her dad's construction business 3 years ago. She swallowed hard. The reunion wasn't supposed to happen this way. She was supposed to be clean and made up and dressed like the knockout he'd told her she'd be. Instead, she was... She glanced down at her sawdust and grime-covered overalls over her torn Wonder Woman t-shirt and stifled a groan. She was a mess.
I was told the house was being renovated. Sorry to interrupt you, Tristan said with a nod, striding past her toward the staircase.
Open-jawed, she stared after him as he climbed the stairs without even saying hello. She sagged back onto her heels as her heart seemed to drop below her ribs. Had he not recognized her? All these years of anticipation, build-up, and smoking hot fantasies, and the guy didn't even remember who she was. She couldn't believe it. She blinked several times. In her most vivid daydreams, she'd pictured him in a black tux and her in a white beaded gown and veil, like perfect wedding cake toppers. She stared down at the pitted support beam she'd exposed. Sometimes in her business, damage could be repaired with epoxy or additional fasteners or bracing. But sometimes a damaged thing simply wasn't salvageable. And in the span of less than a minute, this whole day,
along with her lifelong crush on Tristan McGuffey, had fallen into the latter category. Unsalvageable. She gave a defeated sigh. Teen fantasies were just that. Fantasies. This was real life, and this house was her real job. She had to pick her heart back up and get back to work. Any mourning for the past she'd always dreamed of would have to be done later, preferably when she was tucked into her own bed. Forcing herself to focus, she tossed the floor plank onto the pile behind her and set the pry bar next to her knee. The exposed support beam had a 2.5-foot section that was riddled a few inches deep with holes and wafer-thin husks of wallowed-out wood. The powder post beetles had evidently thrown a party under the old Victorian house. At least someone was having fun around here. From underneath the house, two green eyes stared up at her through the hole in the floor.
Meow.
The sound was raspy, but got the point across. Hey, Lolo, want to take the shortcut? Cassidy patted the floor next to her. The ancient cat crouched, but didn't leap. Instead, she stared and made a hissing sound like a compressor hose quick connect. Okay, I get it. Help's on the way. Cassidy climbed down into the hole and lifted the cat into the room, then climbed out herself. You could have come up the porch steps and through the front door, you know.
Meow.
Cassidy smoothed the dusty, ruffled gray and white fur on Lolo's back. When the front door opened, the cat slunk out of the room, probably to her usual hidey hole under the staircase. Lolo was not into people these days. She could relate. Ordinarily, Cassidy was positive and satisfied. But for some reason, lately, it felt like her life was off balance, as if something was missing. After her dad died, she missed him, of course. And then her little brother went away to college, and she missed him too. But this was different. It made her uncomfortable, like an itchy tag on a shirt.
Hey!
Her best friend Amanda's voice came from where Tristan had stood only minutes earlier. Hey yourself, Cassidy said, trying to sound neutral, which was probably futile, since Amanda could read her moods as quickly as the trashy tabloids she consumed like candy. Amanda was the only person in the world who knew about Cassidy's decade-long infatuation with Tristan. Nobody else was in on the secret, especially Tristan.
Ready to shoot today's video?
Amanda was wearing a bright red floral top with a scoop neck and flowing bell sleeves that fluttered when she brandished her phone like a magic wand. As always, she wore large, coordinating earrings, roses this time, that hung on wires well below her close-cropped, curly black hair. Amanda's tastes ran on the flamboyant, vintage, eclectic side, and she pulled it off like a boss.
Yep, ready to film.
Cassidy had been chronicling her work on the house and posting it to YouTube to share with the handful of remodelers she'd befriended at a seminar on restoring old houses she'd attended 2 months ago in Bangor. All 5 people in her group were in various stages of restoration on their projects and shared tips with each other weekly. Her house, which she'd affectionately named Dolores, was in the best shape of any of the others in her group. Of course, it wasn't her house. It was Roger McGuffey's house. As in, the father of the man who, in all his golden-haired glory, was somewhere on the floor above her. She stared at the ceiling, then back to the hole in the floor.
You okay, Cass? Amanda asked.
Yes, fine. Amanda stared at her for several moments, no doubt seeing right through her, like she always did.
Whose car is out front?
She asked as she wiped the camera lens of her phone on one of her flowing sleeves.
Tristan's,
she mumbled.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Roger said he was coming in to check out the clinic, not the house.
She lowered her voice, her eyes twinkling.
Any chance he's here to check you out, too?
Cassidy fought back a groan, grateful the man was upstairs and out of earshot. Definitely not. Amanda scanned the entry hall and both rooms flanking it.
Is he here?
Cassidy shifted to sit with her legs dangling into the hole she'd cut through the subfloor. Yeah, he had a bag, so I guess he's going to spend the night.
Here?
Amanda, sleeves flapping, gestured wildly to the partly demolished entry hall and living areas.
The bedrooms are still intact. I'm only working on structural issues and the first floor, Cassidy said, reaching out to pull the tins of epoxy and activator closer to her, along with a cup to mix them in.
Amanda's face lit up.
Did he tell you how long he's going to stay? Old Man McGuffey would give an arm or a leg to keep him here.
She winked. And I imagine you would offer up some choice body parts as well.
No, he didn't say anything to me at all, other than an apology for interrupting.
Cassidy immediately regretted the words, as her insightful friend studied her long enough that she had to resist the urge to squirm. Finally, Amanda said,
"That's odd."
It was odd, all right. Cassidy had dreamed about Tristan for years, and he hadn't even recognized her. She felt forgettable.
"What are you going to do?" Amanda asked. "Can I help? I mean, this is perfect, right?"
"Perfectly awful."
"Please don't do anything," Cassidy said. "Let me see how it goes, okay?"
Knowing Amanda, she'd try to do some painfully unsubtle matchmaking and create a huge mess out of an already awkward situation.
"Suit yourself. I'm sure we could find a creative way to jar his memory."
Amanda held her phone up. Its rhinestone case glittered in the sunlight slanting in from the tall sash windows in the dining room.
"In the meantime, let's get filming."
Cassidy considered going to the bathroom to wash her hands and brush her hair, but why bother? Her videos hadn't found a following at all. The only people who watched were her buddies from the seminar, and they looked equally grubby in their own videos. Besides, she was about to reach into the dirty underbelly of the structure again anyway. An image of the handsome man upstairs flooded her brain, and she shook her head. He'd already seen her like this. No point in trying to right the wrong first impression. Cassidy focused a work light on the beam spanning the gaping hole in the floorboards and motioned Amanda over.
"Hey, restoration friends," she said,
after Amanda nodded to indicate they were rolling. "I crawled under the house and only spotted a suspicious area on the top of one support beam, so my demolition was minimal. Since I'll be refinishing the floors as a part of this project, I removed a few of the pitted planks and a small area of subfloor to access the area from above, since that was where the damage was concentrated. As you know, houses of this age were constructed of old-growth wood, so I'll make every effort to retain as much of the original material as possible. In this case, the area of powder post beetle damage is small. I'll use an epoxy made for this purpose to fill the voids and strengthen the area rather than replace the beam." Cassidy's thoughts momentarily flitted back to Tristan and how easily he'd ignored her as he'd strode past without a glance. What she needed was an epoxy that could fix broken fantasies, or maybe something to fix her so that her fantasies could become reality. No, that was totally the wrong attitude. What she needed was to let those fantasies go and begin living her life, the real one she'd carved out and created all by herself. Now, if she could just get her heart on board with the idea.
"That was great! You get better every time,"
Amanda said after they finished the shoot. She was doing something on her phone, probably uploading the video, since they filmed it in one shot and it didn't need an edit. Her eyes narrowed.
"That's strange."
Cassidy wiped her hands on the tops of her denim-clad thighs.
"What?" "Your subscription numbers."
She didn't take her eyes off the phone screen.
all whopping 5 subscriptions from my restoration friends? Cassidy said with a grin. She'd only had one view that wasn't tied to her group, and that one didn't subscribe, unsurprisingly. No one else in her group had been successful at growing an audience for their channels either. Better turn off the subscriber notifications so they don't blow up your phone. Amanda's brow furrowed as she studied her screen.
Huh.
She continued scrolling, still looking puzzled.
Well, you don't have 5 anymore.
She turned the screen to the analytics page for Cassidy's YouTube channel.
You have over 5,000.
Chapter 2.
Jack Winston sat back in the soft leather sofa and stared at the sprawling LA skyline outside the bank of windows lining the wall of his penthouse apartment, and tried to ignore his assistant's fidgeting. Dee had worked for him for over a month now, so he knew this wasn't her normal behavior. She'd gone from hand-wringing to foot-tapping as she pretended to study his weekly schedule and incoming emails. He took a sip of coffee and studied her. Evidently feeling his eyes on her, she looked up.
"Would you like more coffee?"
He saluted her with his cup. "No, thank you. I'm good." But she clearly wasn't. Maybe her boyfriend had dumped her. Did she have a boyfriend? They never talked about anything personal, even though she spent 8 hours a day either with him or somewhere nearby. His manager kept her busy with this and that, but he didn't know much about her, other than she was in her 20s and had been hired straight out of undergrad. He studied her as she tapped a pencil on the desk, eyes unfocused as she stared at the computer monitor.
"You okay?"
She met his eyes briefly, and for a moment, he thought she was going to say something. But then she looked away, evidently finding the enormous fireplace at the end of the room fascinating. He'd always found the fireplace puzzling. Who in L.A. needed a fireplace? He sighed. It was all for show, just like everything and everyone in this town. A familiar, confident, staccato snapping of heels sounded from the hallway behind him, and when he glanced back at Dee, she looked relieved. Oh yeah, something was definitely wrong. Nobody ever felt relief at the approach of Marion Hill. Terror, maybe. Dread, absolutely. But never relief. He focused on maintaining his relaxed pose on the sofa as he braced for his manager's entrance. Being an actor paid off in moments like this. If Marion smelled weakness, she was like a shark with blood in the water, leaving nothing but carnage behind. It's why she'd been hired to handle the business side of his career, a brilliant move on his part.
"Why aren't you dressed for your photo shoot, Mr. Winston?"
Marion's harsh nasal voice said from somewhere behind him. Jack glanced down at his bathrobe, lounge pants, and slippers.
"I wasn't aware there was a photo shoot."
He could practically feel Marion's glare burning holes in the back of his skull.
"She works for you," he reminded himself.
"Hollywood Weekly is doing a feature on you to coincide with the announcement of Mad Planet 4, she said.
He flopped his head onto the back of the sofa and groaned. He should never have agreed to a 4th movie. The storyline was exhausted, and so was he.
"Tell them to use the outtakes from their shoots for Mad Planet 1, 2, or 3.
It was unnerving that Marion was still hovering somewhere behind him, but he resisted the urge to turn around.
"They need current shots. You look different now."
Well, that was true. He looked healthier now. He was healthier now, physically, emotionally, and mentally, and he planned to keep it that way. If he was honest with himself, this harpy of a manager was in huge part responsible.
"Where's the shoot?"
"At their studio, of course."
He glanced over at the desk where Dee still fidgeted with nervous energy.
Her dark skin paled, and her panicked eyes darted to his.
I must have forgotten to tell you about that, Mr. Winston.
Huh. As an actor, it was his business to study human behavior, and he'd never seen her like this. Dee was nothing if not extremely organized. He opened his mouth to say something reassuring, but Marion had already sensed blood in the water.
You're fired, Miss Laporte,
Marion said in that terrifying, authoritative voice of hers. The hairs prickled on the back of Jack's neck as he fought the urge to tell Marion to back off. Instead, he remained still in his relaxed position and calmly lied.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me about this photo shoot, Dee. I totally forgot. My bad. Please give them a call and ask if they can shoot here instead.
That should work. They loved to do features in celebrities' homes, and he couldn't imagine Marion contradicting him over this. As if shot from a cannon, Dee launched out of her chair and ran from the room, her sneakers squeaking on the bamboo flooring all the way down the hall. Stop covering for her. She's underqualified and inexperienced, Marion said, striding to sit at the desk Dee had vacated.
She needs to be replaced.
She'd just graduated with honors from Berkeley. She was overqualified for a job like this, but arguing with Marion never ended well. Best to stick to a less combative, personal approach.
I like her. Liking someone gets you nowhere. I thought you had learned that lesson.
Yeah, he sure had. He'd hired and surrounded himself with people he thought were friends for a decade, and it had almost destroyed his career and his life. It's why he'd coaxed Marion out of retirement. The self-proclaimed battle axe had cleaned house, so to speak, and saved his ass. If not for Marion Hill, he'd probably be back stocking grocery store shelves. Still, he couldn't let her fire Dee for one mistake. God knew he'd made plenty of them and had been given chance after chance after chance.
I want to give her another shot, he said finally.
He'd never seen Marion roll her eyes before. It was incongruous with her meticulously styled and dyed two-tone brown hair and her stiff suit jacket. Jack recrossed his legs and studied Marion as she tapped her manicured nails over the keyboard. The woman was a Hollywood legend, and based on her career timeline, she had to be in her early 80s. She was either blessed with eternal youth or had some work done by a doc with real talent, because she looked decades younger. She wore glasses with stylish red frames that matched her blouse and possessed the most prominent resting bitch face he'd ever seen. She turned her gaze on him, and he resisted the urge to flinch like a naughty child. Yeah, she was that good.
Your agent is having the revised screenplay for 4 sent by courier. It should be here any minute. Oh, and they're sending another script with it. It's a new series from HBO that, according to the producer, screams your name.
It could scream all it wanted, and so could she. He wasn't doing a TV series right now. What he really wanted was some downtime. While he appreciated the improvements to his life and his bank accounts Marion had produced, he was feeling the stress of her ambitions. His mind drifted back to Dee. Maybe that's what was wrong with her, too. Marion's ceaseless pressure.
I'm going to see my sister and her kids in Malibu, he said.
You have a lot going on right now. I don't advise that, Mr. Winston.
Of course she didn't. The more money he made, the more she made. He admired her drive and was grateful she'd taken him on, but he really needed a break from her. From L.A., from Mad Planet, and most of all, from the constant pressure squeezing him from all aspects of his personal life. If one could even call it that. He didn't go out anymore. He didn't date. He may never date again, at least not seriously. It never ended well. In fact, it ended horribly every single time. He got that from his mom.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?